right, we are here once again, episode 3 of the Hot Plate, up in our game here each time. Welcome, Rob. Hey, how was your 4th of July?
The 4th was good. It was pretty low key. I think we have a new family tradition, and it's actually pretty bizarre. So, of course, there's like a bunch of, you know, typical movies you think of when you think of the 4th of July and like the whole, like, you know, you think of Mel Gibson, The Patriot, you know, just like classic movie, part of that whole like Russell Crowe Gladiator era of like 90s action films or early 2000s action films. But one movie that doesn't really get highlighted enough is like Independence Day with Will Smith, where he like saves the world from aliens. And it was hilarious. We threw it on. The kids thought it was bizarre. They liked it. It's always funny when you watch like a movie and its special effects from like the 90s or whatever today. And like, I realize there's all this like interesting symbolism in it tied to like the military. Like there's like an insignia on like this kind of platform that one of the service members walks over, and it's this Tactical Air Command insignia, which was, I think it was decommissioned in 1992, and they turned it into Air Combat Command, which is like a big MAGCOM that Kessel Run supports and like really comes up in a lot of conversations around like, you know, what direction is the Air Force going? It was just funny to recognize that insignia, Google it and be like, wow, that I stopped the movie and like looked into it. It was just weird. It was funny.
Nice. You know, what's another good movie you should watch?
Apocalypse Now. Oh,
come on, Rob.
Someday. Dude, I love it. So hey, you should tell everybody about like the history behind you recommending that and me agreeing and like never putting it on.
Years. I even tried to get your wife involved. She was going to schedule it and make sure you watched it, but we'll make it happen.
She actually loves that movie, which is so funny. She mentions it all the time. It's crazy. It's like the one war movie I haven't seen.
Yeah, this is like bizarro world.
Truly. Do you have a favorite scene from that movie?
I have a unfavorite scene. And there's like literally one scene that jumps out as that was the only scene in this movie that is just a step below the rest.
Which one?
That is when they get up to the bridge that keeps getting blown up and every day, and then they build it the next night, or gets blown up every night, they build it the next day so they can keep saying the road's open. And when they get there, there was a guy who had been sent there to deliver, you know, the next steps in his order. And he goes, you know, like, hey, Captain Willard. And he's like, yes. And he's like, here you go. He's like, am I glad to see you? Now I can get out of here. And if they had stopped, and that was, it's all good. And then he like pauses and says, if I can find a way. And it was just like, what? Like, an extra word bad, like he just sort of said it was like literally it's jarring as like the only part of the movie that's not fantastic. So
I'm surprised, like with the technology today and all the streaming platforms, like I'm sure if the director or producers wanted, they could have that like edited out.
Yeah, like when they do, when they did the Redux version, if literally all they had done was nuke that 3 seconds of dialogue, it would have made it.
It would have been like
instead of adding a bunch of stuff that was cut because it needed to be cut.
It would have went from like a 91 to 96 on Rotten Tomatoes. Exactly. Just from that one edit. Exactly. I love it, dude.
Cool. Well, that's funny. You said you had a
wait, real quick, Mark. Oh, yeah. I just want to mention with Independence Day, one of the funniest things that like I hadn't seen it in years. I can't believe like A, the president's a fighter pilot in it, and B, Cousin Eddie from National Lampoon's is like his wingman.
Yes.
It's like the craziest thing ever. Like that whole situation when you're watching it like 20 plus years later and you're like, what is going on? I love this. All right.
Nice.
Anyway, sorry.
So you claimed to have a fun and exciting topic that we should focus on today.
Yeah. So I know we talk a lot about like the military, like, you know, just like the weird innovation stuff and the military stuff, but you know, one of the things I've always been really excited in was just creating like a dual use product that might have some, you know, federal technology vibes, but also is like, you know, can stand on its own and can solve like a problem that, you know, a lot of industries have or a lot of consumers have or whatever. And so with Adjective, we've really been like, you know, refining our services offerings, like what can we do for people? But we've kind of like been allocating, I'd say 5% of our attention span to like, what would a future platform look like that's under the Adjective umbrella? And we've kind of made some decisions. We had some ideas where we've been like iterating on simplifying the vector embedding process for large language models and research workflows kind of can roll into that entire sequence, which was really cool. We learned a lot about like automation and how large language models and artificial intelligence works. The difference between the types of artificial intelligence was really valuable. But I think this week we really kind of struck, I guess gold from like a platform perspective and like a lean product perspective, like where to start, what's the initial value proposition? And then how big's like the potential target market and who actually has these kind of pain points that are associated with this product theory we have. So I'm really excited about it. I'm gonna kind of talk around it because we are kind of in adjective slash stealth mode for like the platform play. But we have like a really cool working brand. We have like three extremely visionary product lines that are excited, where the one we're kind of most confident in is going to be where we start, but we think there's like a really easy way to maneuver our way into these two other product lines that all eventually integrate with each other. But from like just a how do we kind of chunk work perspective, like it's easy to separate them as three different product lines and just kind of separate the people who are focused on those things or how much effort we're putting into each of those things. But it's really cool. Essentially, like the overview, with not giving too much away, is I've realized something across all of my engagements, all of my time supporting innovation in the DoD and government and stuff, and just like, working and collaborating with people on projects and stuff. It's really easy to like mischaracterize situations and talk past each other and like, just by default be like unaligned on like what the definition of success is or what desired outcomes are or like how people how people should be able to work together well and more efficiently, right? Like even recently I saw a situation where someone kind of left a company and they were kind of already on a pathway to getting laid off. And it was like that person's an absolute asset. They were just like in a terrible spot. It's like just, if that's your superpower and something you enjoy doing is like, classifying and observing people and the things they enjoy. Like it's really easy to be like, wow, you had them in a really bad position. If they were in another position, the amount of value and like ROI and the multiplier that they would bring into the company is just outrageous. You just like literally put them in a position that like contradicts their everything. And it just like steals value from the company, steals value and confidence from the person, just makes no sense. And so like we really want to help people understand, like our working tagline is understanding us. Like make people really understand people, their perspectives for a variety of different outcomes. It's not just isolated to talent or sales or product, but it's kind of a combination of all of those things.
So who would you sell to? Who would put this into place?
I think anyone who appreciates understanding and kind of reflecting on the people that they're working with, the people that they're managing, or the people that they're selling to, I think. Having been involved in B2B or B2G sales, business to business or business to government sales, like for a lot of the situations when you're selling, you really have like one to three shots with a particular organization, and there aren't endless organizations like there are endless people. It's very different than B2C. It's like half-assing like a pitch or something is kind of an anti-goal when you have, such a small volume of opportunities. So it's like if you have an opportunity to add more detail and be extremely like, objective about that individual, that organization, and what they desire and need, like add a little more fidelity to that and create like a kind of soundboard where people can like define those things. And so I think that that's the specific use case there is more for like a strategic go to market or like a sales opportunity with like a qualified lead. But I think you can take that same kind of discovery and kind of definition work and do it for talent that seems like they, have a lot to offer, but seem like they're not underperforming, but just maybe like not totally sure of themselves and where they should be creating value. I think it could be used in a similar way there. And then products as well, when it comes to utility and usability and like, solving problems for people that need to take a capability or a tool and use it day in and day out to do something or to streamline something. It's like those three different kind of use cases are what we're orbiting around right now.
Oh, God. Okay. So it really is a platform. The, that because those are three totally separate verticals with different audiences and different outcomes, but they're based on a common core that then just get packaged up effectively, almost for both for sales purpose, for your sales purposes, for people to get their head around, and then for tightness of execution.
I think it's, yeah, they're all kind of like connected by understanding people and like being able to define attributes for people extremely well. And they're, I'm not going to kind of reveal the future state of things, but I think there are opportunities to define the attributes for environments and some other kind of things as well. But really, it's kind of like, and the way I've kind of been looking at it too, because a lot, you know, as soon as you start kind of thinking through this product or platform concept, it's like, well, there's HubSpot, there's Salesforce. It's like, I think there's a crazy opportunity in the Web 2.0 world to like reincept some of these things that have gotten so bloated and complicated, where you have to bring in like sales engineers to like train you and build your kit out and like do this whole thing. It's like there's an opportunity to kind of like, you know, create new wedges in those like pretty defined Web 2.0 markets with something that's just like easier to consume, but not so flexible where it's just in use like unusable, where it's like, oh, Trello, it's like cool. Like I don't have time to like build 30 different frameworks. Like it's too flexible. It's like I want some type of guided path, but I want it to be flexible enough where it could target. It's anchored by something like people, but it could address different verticals when it comes to people.
Right. Now, presumably, you would be selling effectively the box vertical, though, rather than trying to sell the platform. I would assume the platform is like your secret sauce slash, powered by. Here's our vertical that I'm selling to you, HR person, or to you, salesperson, or to you, CEO, powered by
Yeah.
this platform and such that.
Powered by the horizontal platform.
Because I can
Totally.
tell you, selling platforms
Exactly. Yeah.
is.
Discover what people's pain points are. And another opinion I've had for a while, like we talked about on previous episodes, like launching Adjective and how I've kind of been living between the enterprise and like the product trenches. I think there's totally an opportunity to centralize insights, and insights that relate to people can be centralized as well, especially if you build that like internal trust and that discipline around like it's so important that like people understand each other and people understand how to work with each other, how to like target customers effectively, and like they're very transparent and honest about what those people need and like biases they might have. Like none of those things are really talked about and everything's just kind of rushed, and then things fall apart and then people get scapegoated and everyone gets anxious. And it's like all of this could be avoided if we just had like more open conversations and put these things on paper and had people like air their concerns about us mischaracterizing things, you know? Like if we were just had it a little more out in the open, I think people could avoid a bunch of pain and cost and stuff.
No, I mean that when you just began sort of that pitch effectively, like all the problems that you highlighted were, I don't think there's anyone who's going to be like, no, we don't have that problem. We never misunderstand each other. We never get to the end and be like, oh, half the company says, yeah, we succeeded, and the other half is, wait, I thought we were doing something else. Like, or again, someone who not in the right role, or a sales pitch that again is not to what they want. Like, that's fantastic. Like, I think you've hit like almost every nerve, across companies, which is fantastic, which means also, if you've got this platform, let's say you swing and a miss on one of these verticals with however you box it up, you've got several others, and then you can loop back, based on what you've learned. And it almost gives you multiple at bats with each customer as well. Like, oh,
I love that.
okay. Yeah, okay, you're right. You didn't love what would help your sales team. Okay. You got these HR problems? Okay, check this out. 'Cause there'll be pieces that they'll probably be like, yeah, I see there's something here, but the way you've packaged it doesn't work for me. But yeah, let me introduce you to, our sales leader or our CEO, because I can see, you guys understand the problem set that we face and are looking to solve it in a unique way. So that's exciting. So what's the
I
next
love that
step?
you.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, no, I just to comment on that, I love that you mentioned that because it's something I really believe in, like sales experimentation. Like a lot of times there's product innovation, but when it comes to sales, people have like the playbooks that they're comfortable with. They might have like legit like sales doctrine within these organizations that they have to subscribe to or kind of contribute through. And I think I'm excited as like a small business slash, you know, startup, that we're going to have an opportunity to do sales experimentation, like you were saying. It's like not only at the feature level, but it's like, you know, does this message resonate with you? Because like it's something we've experienced in our industry, or it's something we experienced during, you know, our HR cycles or our sales cycles. Like, how painful is it for you? And even if people, my assumption is that people are gonna be like, oh no, we do this stuff right, we do this stuff great. And then you look at their LinkedIn and it shows their percentages of people that have left and gone and transitioned. Mm. Like all of that hidden tactical data is like under wraps a little bit. Mm. And it's like part of that experimentation is like, how do you just tell the right story, right? Because it's pretty obvious that like, if you don't know people well, or if they're uncomfortable and people can't relate to each other, it's just harder to work together. It's harder to kind of communicate value propositions. It's harder to select target customers that are accurate. It's more about like, how do you package it in a way to make people feel comfortable to kind of adopt this new model and this like radical transparency? And another thing, sorry, one last thing that we could move on, but you reminded me of like, you know, you were talking when you were saying like it struck all the nerves. Another interesting thing is like, even when people disagree, or if like they're both focused on solving a problem, right? Maybe you have like multiple heavy hitters on the same call that are kind of going to chip away at different pieces at solving that problem. They all want to advocate for what they're good at and what they're strong in. I think having like a centralized platform for them to have those conversations about that person that they're trying to convert or convince of something, they can have like open conversations about things. And what's great about it being a platform is like, even if they disagree in the heat of the moment, because people are like passionate, people are passionate about their approaches, they can step away and later go revisit that same card, that same kind of baseball card for that individual with their attributes and say, oh wait, they did kind of make an interesting point. Like if this person feels this type of way about this other outcome, the way I'm approaching it might not land well. And they can just, it gives them space to like self-reflect and think more deeply about their passionate opinions of things.
Yeah. Well, to that point, you are externalizing and objectifying the issue that it, and take it out of this emotional thing from person A and this emotional thing from person B, and it's them two. And you're taking that out and putting it up in this third, you know, it's not A or B, it's this external thing. And so, you know, down the road again, if someone's like, hey, we should go in this direction. And someone could be like, yeah, I'm pretty sure before you were saying it was important to go the other way. Did something change or did you forget? And then that's where people can get wrapped up. We're like, I don't know, let's consult the platform. Let's see.
Yeah.
You know, we filled out this form, you know, for a reason. And it takes things out of not only the heat of the moment, but also kind of immortalize it, is it for future reference? Doesn't mean it can't be changed, but at least it's not my memory versus your memory or the emotions at the time. Because I've had that, you know, where in the past we're on projects where we will have a conversation around what does success look like? And we will think, we'll walk out of that meeting, think that we agree on something. But
yeah,
you know, if it's not kind of immortalized in something that people can always look at, people reference, again, when like, hey, you're doing some, if let's say you notice something someone's doing that you think is putting the success at risk. Option A is you go try to convince them they're putting that thing at risk, yeah, and that never goes well. Or you can say, hey, let's have a review session of, you know, what we put into this platform, and let's kind of score ourselves collectively and see how we are, and completely takes the emotion and the it's not you against me. It's, hey, we're collectively reviewing this thing that we all together said. And it, I think a lot of those differences it will become apparent of like, oh yep, we've diverged. Okay. And no one's arguing about, did we diverge? You're just now having a conversation of, does that make sense to do?
And why?
Yeah. And you're starting from a calm state rather than, only getting that point because you've just had this emotional discussion. And finally someone said, and so let's say that person B finally realizes whatever, says, okay, you're right. Yep, I diverged. I shouldn't have. What are we gonna do now? But you're both already spent all your energy and are not in the best place. And if you didn't skip that whole trying to help someone remember or convince or whatever state, and y'all just started reviewing something you both had collectively agreed that was there. That's cool.
And we're just talking about like the the person layer, right? Not even like the campaign or action or activity layer, which, you know, is I think the next stage where it's like this, these are people we're trying to define and really understand their needs. And then you go beyond that to their environment or a specific action that's occurring, a situation, an activity. And then you do the same thing. I think like listening to you explain that scenario, it's almost like a form of strategy attestation where it's like you have waypoints and decision points and contributions and inputs from different individuals and perspectives that could be right or wrong. It's really interesting. It's really cool because exactly what you're saying happens a lot of times if you're not disciplined about this is like situations happen. There's one or two dominant voices. You know, one person that might have the right idea tries to speak up, gets minimized. That action is not taken. Everyone, you know, executes their business off of this incorrect mischaracterization of what's needed. And then once it all falls apart, you know, whoever's the easiest to scapegoat gets scapegoated and fingers are pointed. And the only entity that loses is the business, right? The only entity that loses is like whatever the object of success is. Everyone else just tries to protect themselves. And like the thing that everyone was like kind of connecting and assembling to like solve gets loses. I mean, it's not successful. And so you have to restart everything. People fall off. Like, and to avoid all that, I think if you're just more disciplined about organizing that information, that data, you could still be wrong. It's not going to make you right every time. It just helps you kind of choose your adventure more accurately.
Well, think about it also, to your point, like if the CEO starts doing things that are off mission, what is anyone, who is really going to go like, hey man, I want to remind you of this thing that you seem to have forgotten, but I remember. That's not going to happen. Whereas if there's just this, again, external, objective, periodic, everybody reviews the, this thing that had been externalized after that initial discussion, it's no one is against anyone. And so the, we'll say weakest person in the room or just person who tends to not get listened to, they're quiet or whatever factor causes someone to be listened to less than others, completely it can remove that layer, whatever's causing that bias, or whatnot, because now there's a subjective thing that is being reviewed and it's not reliant on any one person to carry the day in the conversation. All they need to do, in fact, they don't even need to point to the objective thing because you probably, I would assume, as part of your onboarding, people to this, part of that is you have weekly or biweekly or monthly checkpoints is part of the package effectively that you do. So it removes, any individual from being required to keep everything on track.
And that's where I think, like you, I know you were about to ask, like, so what's the next stage? We're definitely going deep on architecture decisions and how to build something that is capable enough, but extremely like low lift, trying to use things like AWS Amplify to streamline a bunch of our backend stuff, like just get authentication out of the box and just be able to test the value of the product itself as quickly as possible. And then think about if it does land well, you know, and, you know, like you said, it's interesting because it's targeting something so horizontal where we could fail in some verticals and end up hitting gold in some obscure one. We had some conversations about this one untapped industry today. And we were just like, oh my goodness, I can't believe I've never thought of this. And then I went and did some like high level market research, and it's like nobody's trying to break in here or tap into this industry or look at it this way. You know, it is one of those kind of more challenging industries where, you know, there probably are a lot of companies that operate there comfortably, and a lot of other people are kind of skittish and trying to sell to that market. But I love those types of markets. You know, that is very kind of niche DoD style, you know, energy, like very, very kind of insulated, and I have no problem selling into those markets. I actually enjoy the people that are SMEs and operate in those. So I was excited to discover upon that, but it was one of the many. And so I think like identifying a simple enough architecture to tease out the real value of the product would be outstanding, and manage kind of the baseline of the things we need: user accounts, you know, separate instances, all of those different things. And then also keeping like one of our big design patterns, which is so funny because I have an engagement right now where it's kind of the opposite. It's like everything's got to be complex. Like we need to stuff all this automation into this bundle, and like until it's like, a robot controlling everything, like it's not worth anybody's time. I joke around and I'm like, hey, the DraftKings ticker feature is coming in next release. Like they just went through us like random things. And one of the themes of this product is keep it as simple as possible, because I want people incentivized to use it and not abandon it. I don't want it to be this complex workflow where, they have to, it's kind of like HubSpot, right? Where it's like you have to set this thing right for it to really be valuable and for other people to see it and use it. Like, I don't want all these gates to make it a usable, valuable product. I want it to be very like a step above like completely blank artboard and not as flexible as like a Trello or Asana, but like more opinionated, but use that opinionated environment to solve one specific problem in a fast way where people can get on there, see the people they need, create a profile for a person they need, define them with attributes that are potentially pre-built, and then potentially, use that to generate user stories, use that to generate, some type of context for an LLM integration, something like that, where it's just the interaction is just very streamlined and it's just, delightful to just log in, do your thing, and get out,
That's great.
or stay there forever.
Well, keep it simple, but no simpler. And I would attribute that, but I have decided I'm getting out of the quote attribution game. I'm going to make clear I didn't make it
Just own
up.
it all,
But I mean, but the odds of the person who most quotes are attributed to being that person are about zero. And even if, let's say, you get it right, like let's say it's some presidential speech, they didn't write it. You said it.
That's
And
true.
at the end of the day, I promise you, any quote that you look at from whoever it is, if you go back, you will find that in some ancient Greek or Roman text. Like, and I'm sure
That's awesome.
all around the world from thousands and thousands of years ago, like it's all been said. Don't claim credit.
Dude, that would be an awesome like NLP library plugin similar to Grammarly, where it's like some type of browser app where you can just like highlight quotes and you can immediately query like Mark's database of like relevant quotes to maybe attribute to. Like you don't like real time have to produce an attribution, but you could just find who said this thing or who likely said it. That would be
When
hilarious.
in doubt, it's Mark Twain.
Yes, when in doubt, it's Mark Twain. That's awesome. I love that.
Well,
Dude, so I
cool.
got some questions for you. You've been in the customer engagement and customer experience game forever. You manage customers better than, probably anyone I know. Like you're very good at connecting with them, very honest and transparent with them. You can connect kind of their pain points to things that whoever you're representing can solve or at least consider. Like, where do you think, like you just heard like my product concept and idea. Where do you think there's opportunities to like understand the customer better and not only understand the customer better, but share that understanding with other people on like any of your teams you've ever been on?
Let me make sure I understand. Your customer or your customer's customer, when say that
Yeah,
again.
no, so your customer. So let's simplify it. You're an account manager. You are managing an account that has like three different individuals that kind of orbit your space. They're all different roles at this company.
Got it.
And you do have, part-time people that swoop in and solve problems with you for this particular account. Do you think there's an opportunity to use the platform I described to kind of share that context for that customer, all of kind of their sub archetypes and the things they want and don't like, and maybe conversation logs with those individuals in like a really simple and consumable way?
I mean, why wouldn't there be?
Is there, well, I guess my pain point or my question is like, are there pain points around like a mischaracterization of the problem that you're trying to solve for a customer when you're collaborating with other people on your team?
Absolutely. And for the same reasons. Like in fact, I would say I don't think there's any difference between you and your customer trying to establish what you're trying to accomplish, and having that clear understanding. And then even then back to if you have to explain this to someone else, you would want to have that, again, that external thing that we
That
all
like
agree
evidence.
on. And you can probably even use the one you built with the customer. But I'd say in if there, let me put it this way, if there's humans involved, what you're talking about is going to help. That's the, again, another quote of, I don't remember who said it, and even if I did, it would be wrong. But it's the hardest thing about communication is the illusion that it has occurred. So you're gonna get
That's really
it
cool.
wrong. And so the more you can have things externalized and visible, and because then you can come back to later when you're thinking about it later and you're like, I wonder if we really meant the same thing, or do I remember that right? You can then go, hey, come here to that other person. Let's go poke at what we wrote down here. Let's just go over this phrase here. What do we really mean by that? Both again, to periodically refresh your mutual understanding, as well as give the opportunity, ego-free, for someone to say, you know what? This is totally what I meant at the time, but now that I've thought about it more, or with new data that we have, we should change that. And that would not have been nearly as smooth or frequent if it was just a free form conversation that y'all were having. Like, again, I think this thing you're putting together of a method for externalizing conclusions effectively, of any meetings for the purposes of review and refresh, I think is going to work in every forum.
It's so interesting. That's like my ultimate goal, though, is like to just help people communicate with each other better and also build like real empathy between folks. Like, no, because like when there isn't some type of, like you were saying, a conclusion or objective that's defined or something, everyone just like kind of, reverts back to like protecting their ego and like social engineering and manipulation, and like everything just gets bad. And like I said earlier, the only thing that's suffers is the objective, the mission,
No, I mean, the number of
which is
times where I and again, I'm sure I do the same thing, on the other sides, but which tells you even more how bad it is, because I can tell you the number of times where some conversation will be going on about how we're going to do something, and I'll just be sitting there, like I have this like twitch where like I'll like look behind me and like is anyone else hearing this? Like, am I on crazy pills? Because not 2 weeks ago we said the absolute worst thing we can do is X, and everybody is now saying we should do X. And again, maybe things changed, maybe X is the right way to go. I don't want to be dogmatic, but I swear to God, like we need to all acknowledge here that 2 weeks ago we said X was a bad idea. We don't have to stick to it. Things change all the time, but you're all acting like that never happened. And so,
Dude, that's
but now
so
it's
funny.
upon me or someone else, to suddenly, sometimes solo, overturn or stop this tide of literally everyone else in the room, or just one person who's, super high powered. Not only do it successfully, but in a way that you walk out of that meeting with, a stronger relationship, those people, and not less, because you just had to take a turd on the table to get people's attention. And even though the right thing for the mission happened, all everyone remembers is you took a turd on the table. And so
So true.
let this let you know your platform can take,
Yeah, put the
turd.
pain, put the risk, put like the disagreement into the platform and not have it across people,
Exactly, because
Totally.
you can maintain. It's a lot easier to maintain a relationship when all you do is like, can we? I forgot. Can we review, what's in the platform again? And then when someone realizes, oh yes, we totally diverged, we were wrong, we'll change it. Or again, situation change. But like that person who just said, hey, can we take a look at that again, doesn't lose that relationship. And so yeah, no,
And
it's great.
it also makes it really like visible and transparent to try to subscribe to something where everyone can put their thoughts and combine perspectives. They could even, I mean, there's an opportunity to even kind of add, associate inputs to certain people if there's like a credit concept in this whole thing. But you quickly get to see anyone who's trying to dismiss the centralization of what success is and coming together, finding something. You immediately see the people that should be owning the risk, because it's like, if you want to sidestep this thing that we're trying to like all contribute to and maintain as a source of truth, if you want to go down a different path and you want to override it, based on ego or, this concept that you know better than the combination of everybody's perspectives, like you have to own that risk, and it's very visible to everyone. Like, sure, you can do what you want. You can like avoid this thing we've all agreed upon, but now you are the owner of that risk, and the likelihood of them being able to scapegoat others is very low, like, because it's just so transparent
And
versus.
take it for the team and call them out. There's a
Yeah, and
beacon on
that's
the
the thing.
hill pointing where
Well,
what's
that
going
dude, that
on.
happens all the time because you have someone who has socially engineered or manipulated their way into a situation. Somehow they have more clout. They take ownership and decide to override what like the collective strategy is. They struggle or fail, and that kind of risk that they accrued ends up getting shifted across everyone as if it's like equally distributed. And it's like, no, like you just totally threw a grenade into this whole thing. And you own that risk now. Like that's another thing I think. Like risk ownership is so big and powerful. And I think everyone should share the risk, right? I'm not about that. But when somebody decides that they don't want to converge on a solving a problem and they want to own that risk like individually, th there's a distinction there now that there's this platform, which I love.
Power to the people,
And just
Rob.
protects people, man, protects employment, protects like even legal stuff, right? Like, I mean, this could be like straight up like traceability kind of chain of custody of decisions and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Great. Well, so you were just up in North Carolina near the Research Triangle. What do you think of that area?
It's really cool because it's kind of like it reminds me of one of those like sci-fi kind of like organic, bioorganic mixed with like high-tech devices and equipment settings. You see some of that in Western Georgia now. Like all there's like this one area, it's not Peachtree City, but it's kind of near there on so I used to work very frequently in Montgomery, Alabama. There's like a cool software factory there in the Air Force called Bespin. Amazing, amazing organization. You know, 300 plus airmen blue suiters that learned how to code and are building real products for a ridiculously reasonable cost to the taxpayers. Just awesome. So driving out that way, I had to cut through a bunch of like, you know, farmland. And this farmland with like all of the innovation happening in ag tech and stuff, just it looks like out of a sci-fi movie. You drive through these areas and they probably have all these like Starlink hubs and like it's just nuts. They have like drones rigged up that are doing seeding and some of the other activities, but it just looks like this beautiful, like huge peach orchards and like crazy trees and beautiful foliage and then like really interesting little techie things sprinkled throughout it and you're like, where am I? This looks like paradise. Those are the vibes I get from Research Triangle.
Well, the thing though that it lacks is, and this is, I think this is the challenge, is how do you combine that with like actual people living there and having reasonable lives amidst, you're seeing, hey, here's a cool office building amongst these trees, and that's great, but it's like that's not where you go walk down to the grocery store or over to meet your friends at a restaurant, or take the kids to the park. That's right. Like, they're not living neighborhoods.
That's the
That's
challenge.
the and I and you think about it, like sci-fi, the sci-fi movies you're kind of referring to, they kind of sidestep that problem of like, hey, this will look cool and futuristic, but like it doesn't look very fun.
Fun's a great point, right? Like, I think that's an interesting metric that, you know, society would obviously have to start recognizing this, but like when these you know, when these like suburban kind of housing developments are built, you know, the developers, you know, unless it's like some super like weird high-end quirky spot that's like artistically branded or whatever, they're not like, oh yeah, let's like make sure that people like interacting with each other within our little community we're building. Yeah, there's probably some of that, but not to the extent of like it being a focal point. If there was some type of, and this is like touching, you know, dystopian like, you know, government overreach stuff. But if there is some type of incentive to be like, you know, the MPS score of like the residents of this area has to be a certain threshold, then people would be incentivized to like lay buildings out differently, you know, create more separation between them, maybe sacrifice having a building so they could spread the houses out a little differently or the apartment complex, whatever it ends up being. There's this construction company called DPR. Have you heard of them? So DPR, it's funny because a buddy of mine works commercial insulation for like big high rises, data centers, whatever. He works for a company called Specified Technologies Incorporated. They're pretty cool, but he always kind of talks about this really unique customer of theirs that stands out, DPR, which is kind of like a JE Dunn or Turner, like a contractor, like a general contractor. But they are kind of wrapped with the Silicon Valley vibes of like people first and stuff, which is kind of an interesting thing to introduce to that like industrial construction, you know, market. And it's really cool. I think they have like a presence in Charlotte, I think, like a big presence. It's one of their HQs. I think they have one on the West Coast and one in Charlotte. But I just brought them up because they seem like a company that would have some type of like joy metric or something associated with their buildings that they would try to incorporate into the design, which is cool.
Yeah, I think we're it just It's good that things used to be like super dangerous and iffy and fell over and exploded, and we certainly needed more regulation and various things around that. But from what I'm seeing, it's a little too far to like everything has to be insanely safe and certain sizes. One thing, a lot of places are now getting rid of mandatory parking rules, which when I first heard that, I was like, wait, that sounds terrible, because now someone's going to build, like an apartment complex with no parking, and then it'll just be miserable to go there. People take up whatever on-street parking there is from the neighborhoods around there. So that seemed bad at first, and then but what I learned was like, no, all it does is remove the mandate that the government isn't saying you have to have this many parking spots for X number of people. The market will demand it, in that like nobody's going to want to live in an apartment building where there's nowhere to park. But
Dude,
you
yes.
know, but if it's a if the apartment, owners have some sort of feel for the type of people are going to live there, and oh, these people actually, most of them won't have cars. Okay, we'll build less, or they'll have bikes, or they'll have more. Like they'll build it to suit. Or they're like, you know what? There's an insane amount of available on-street parking around here, so it's not really going to ruin anything for them to park there. So I don't need it here. And so you can have trees and things instead of expensive parking. So it just gives that flexibility. But
I
those
love
are the
that,
sorts
dude.
of things where,
Yeah.
it's like keep the rules that keep things reasonably safe, but you don't have to
Yeah, let the
mandate
market demand, let the market
everything.
demand features. It's kind of like, honestly, it's kind of like everything's a product for that concept, right? Where like you didn't normally see that across other industries, right? Products have always been kind of isolated to devices and, software, obviously, eventually, but like now you're seeing like an industrial project could be a product in a sense, right? Or at least the way that you build and manage it and take and share the risk, where an apartment complex is maybe saving $10 million by not kind of forcing this like really Gucci nice parking lot with like EV chargers and everything, but they're taking on that risk in the market. They might not get the demand might not be there. Maybe the location's strong enough to get people to move in and give up their cars or pay for parking elsewhere, or like you were saying, leverage street parking. But everything is a product just creates like, and not in like a weird dystopian consumer way, but like product fundamentals, like let the market demand your features or influence your features. Like I love that concept, that idea.
I wonder if anyone's putting together some sort of like a platform to help different parties come together and agree on what success looks like and how to work together and
Dude,
plan
totally.
for
Just
that.
because I love giving shout outs, there's this and back when I was like kicking around this like ag tech product idea with Shanice, my wife, I actually reached out to the CEO of Rumbix. I'm just gonna drop the link in the chat, or maybe I don't know, you could like throw it up on the video once you edit it or
Figure it out.
whatever. But yeah, it's really interesting. Like so Drew DeWalt is like one of the co-founders, I guess he's the COO of Rumbix, but I reached out to him to just learn more about like the industrial product space, and what it looks like to, take a Silicon Valley approach to something like, construction. They've been crushing it. So like they're trying to like disrupt project management, and he actually has such an interesting background as like a former Navy nuke. Like he did some like interesting modular, nuclear reactor discovery back in the early days before that was becoming prominent. Now it's like all over the headlines, like every data center and AI data center that wants to do LLM stuff at scales, considering nuclear energy, they say that's like probably the only way that they'll be able to do it sustainably. And he's just such an interesting cat. And his feedback for Grassley was the product that Shanice and I were like hacking on. It was just amazing. I think he reduced a ton of risk for us, helped us get a lot farther than we could have, maybe should have gotten, without his guidance. And it was just awesome. We ended up, for that quick snapshot for the audience, for that, created a really simple kind of gig economy type platform that was mostly focused on acquiring new forms of data to resell into the commodities market. So we wanted to surface like bug infestation, tree disease, plant disease type stuff on properties at the residential layer, and be able to sell that back to like the Zillows of the world or the realtors. And at the time, like, and we were going to use that by facilitating a gig market experience between landscapers and homeowners, but At the time, Zillow's API was like super stringent, very rigid. We overlooked the SLA a little bit, and we baked it into our initial automation that was going to let us like allow people to do estimations for three clicks or less, similar experience to Uber for their properties. And when we overlooked that, it kind of killed us. But we tried to pivot to Stated, which is another API. But yeah, it was just a great experience. But we were able to pitch Husqvarna, which is like this really cool European kind of tool company. Got a ton of exposure, and it was great.
Cool. All right. Well, excited. I'm glad you have, I think you have hit upon something big here, Rob, with the
I
plot.
know. I hope. Yeah, I'm excited to continue to kind of bring it
Yeah.
up periodically when it makes
Yeah.
sense on our
And
show, but
I think, again, this notion of the platform is kind of your secret sauce, and what you're going to really be selling are the verticals that people can get their heads around, because people can't get their heads around platforms, nor should they need to, beyond, oh, the powered by, again, like knowing, oh, there's something bigger behind this, but they're buying because it solves the problem they have,
yeah.
and that it makes it easy to invest in as well across the company.
Absolutely. And
Well,
that's
cool.
wrapped with that whole like flexible but opinionated experience.
Exactly. Flexible but opinionated. Words to live by. Thanks, Rob. All
Hashtags.
right. We will talk to everybody soon. Thank you.